Greetings, Wargamers. We're your hosts, Trevor,
Jay,
Josh,
and this is
Shane Attack.
Is sponsored by Discount Games Incorporated. Discount Games Incorporated offers the maximum discount on Privateer Press products. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free or reduced shipping. You can find the web store at www.discountgamesinc.com.
Welcome to Chain Attack, the X War Machine and Hordes podcast. I'm your host, Trevor, and I don't play anything.
You should maybe consider changing that.
Yeah, well, between work and having to work with my kids surrounding me, it's hard.
Yeah, how's been the school at home adventures?
It's an adventure. We have three kids who still think they're on summer break, basically.
Yeah. I'm Jay, and I play the shipping game. I've been playing a lot of this game.
Man, Container is one of my favorites.
I feel like I've made mistakes. You know how...
Like mistakes like people's packages aren't going to get to, or mistakes like life choices type.
Like, you know when you're playing a Euro game, and you feel like, okay, I've got this, I know what's going on, and then all of a sudden, everything just, like, goes completely off the rails, and you're like, oh, shit, this isn't working at all. So, yeah, that's my current state of the game.
So, if I had to translate that, you're saying you were making indigo when everyone else is making corn?
Sure. I think it's more like I'm playing Puerto Rico and things are going fine, and then all of a sudden there's a tsunami that comes through Puerto Rico that wasn't in the rules at all. No one expected, and everyone's just kind of fucked.
You weren't even playing the game you thought you were playing.
Correct.
I'm Josh, and I play Tabletop Simulator. I download all the games.
Playing on it.
Basically, all I play is PAX Premier because there's a pretty good solo version.
But oh, I don't know you.
Yeah, I have 8 games under my belt now. I'm ready for a rematch, Trevor.
You're probably gonna smack me down now.
And joining us, we have one very special guest, one William Hungerford.
Hi, my name's Will Hungerford, and I play War Machine, Warcaster, Monsterpocalypse, Riot Quest, and a host of other fun games. I'm glad to be here with all of you, and I will definitely try to bring the mood of this conversation up.
Good!
How's everybody doing?
Oh, Trevor, there goes the mood again.
Yeah. Trevor, you're, I know how tough that is, man. I don't have kids myself, but my friends that do have kids, I've heard that this time is particularly trying for everyone, but for those of you stuck at home with your kids and knowing that school is probably canceled till summer and then rolling right into summer, I don't envy the position you find yourself in.
I find it humorous because the teachers, you know, they have one teaching plan for 30 students, but my wife has 3 teaching plans for 3 different students. And it feels like her job is harder than the teacher's job. You know what I mean? She's like, yeah. She's having to run 3 different classes at the same time. I realize she only has 1 student in each class, yeah. But it's been kind of crazy.
What do y'all do? Like, you know, normally the kids go to school, they get out, but since you're stuck at home, are you doing anything at home as sort of like the escapism? I say that because one thing I've been doing lately is when I'm staying at home as much as I possibly can, but when I have to go out to get groceries, I'm buying one Lego set, and there's a bunch of like nautical themed Lego sets, like sharks and octopus and stuff. Yeah, and so me and my girlfriend are building them like basically once every week or two. And what we're going to do is when this is all said and done, we're going to go to the Lego store when it reopens, and we're going to get the pieces, and we're going to build a fishbowl out of Lego pieces, and we're going to build a quarantarium as a memento of like a little reminder of this time. So you got anything like that y'all are doing? It's like for a fun little hobby side project of escapism?
I mean, I already talked about my board games on Tabletop Simulator. I mean, I make my gymnastic daughter, who is 12, I made her the PE coach over the 7-year-old. So I don't know if that counts.
I mean, it's something, right? It counts.
But he's already in better shape than I'll ever be.
Trevor, you got any family gaming or stuff like that that's helping with all this?
Not really, because we're all gamers, but we all kind of go off and do our own thing. So we all gather in the basement where my computer is in the morning. My kids all gather around their computers in the morning. My wife stands like a proctor at a exam over all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go through and do our thing, and we all sort of finish at different times. So one kid will wander off and go upstairs, and you know, I'll wander off for lunch and then come back. And then when we're, because we don't end at the same time, we all start doing our own things at different times.
Gotcha.
And then I'm like, and then my wife's like, all right, it's bedtime. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I'm still at work, I guess.
That has been crazy. Like the working from home, like I know most of us are doing right now that are able to, and like, you're never off, right? Like you work and then all of a sudden you're like, okay, I guess I'm, you know, saying I'm off for the day. And then like, you're still on your computer. So as emails and stuff are coming in, you're just still working. There went the mood.
So yeah. So my, my day, my life, what I do for fun is I ship.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we have our Martian releases for Privateer Press. We're supposed to be here at the end of March, but because of the plague, they ended up having to go like a bunch of different places before they finally got to us. And it finally got here this week, and Brian and I were, you know, the two guys getting it out. And last night, Brian, he looked at me and he's like, you know, I calculated this out, and normally with the number of people that we would have working on this project, it's about 35, 40 man hours that would be devoted to this that we just did in 2 days. And so that's been my life. I will say the one thing that we've been doing to decompress, Brian still plays WoW.
Mm-hmm.
I ship when he plays WoW. And then we signed up for the 30-day trial of CBS All Access. And we've finished Picard, and we're a few episodes into Discovery.
Cool.
So, nothing as cool as, like, setting up a Lego aquarium in our house, but...
Well, we can't build the aquarium until we can actually get to a store, right? So we're just collecting the little... They do these little $15 sets called Creator 3-in-1s, and you can build three different things out of one set. And, like, one of the sets right now builds a shark, an octopus, or an anglerfish. And so... It's just a little something to keep our hands busy, you know, once a week to just sit there and do. But we're going to end up with this pile of nautical creatures at the end. So we're like, well, we'll see if the Lego store just has a ton of clear pieces when we can go out there. And it should be easy enough to build an aquarium, right? I hope.
Totally.
Totally.
So what are we talking about today?
Well, first we have to do news and announcements.
Okay.
So for Discount Games Inc., another thing that has kept us busy, and I'll say that I'm grateful to everyone who's been doing the orders. We have a special going with Privateer Press items right now that we're selling them at 30% off. You'll be pleased to hear, Mr. William Hungerford, that one product line that's been doing especially well under the sell has been Riot Quest. There's been a lot of people picking up their various Riot Quest models during this, and so that's kept us busy as well.
That's awesome. Real fast about Riot Quest before we go to the rest of your news. I got a lot of really great news this last month. Like, you know, the game's getting bigger and bigger. More and more people are playing it. Lots of people are enjoying it with their families because it's a super casual beer and pretzels game, right? But it got nominated for the Origin Awards for Best Miniatures Game. It's up against some tough competition. It's up against like Gaslands and Warcry and stuff. But that was cool. That was a really nice thing to see. Like, we got the nomination. So even if we don't win, that's just, you know, it makes you feel good. That's something you work on, you know, that people are appreciating and enjoying.
Yeah, and also another thing that I think has been a good indicator for the game is that you know, we've been selling a lot of models and that's great, but there's always that question, like, you know, how many of these are being sold for Riot Quest and how many of them are being sold for War Machine?
Right.
And one of the things that I think has been a good indicator of the health of the game of Riot Quest is that we've actually been also selling a pretty steady amount of playmats.
Yep.
for Riot Quest. And so that's obviously an indicator that there's people who are, you know, buying the playmats and playing that with Riot Quest itself.
Yeah, I had the same thought. It was exactly what you said. Wait, how many people are getting this for War Machine? And, you know, there's the online community that's growing, but, you know, you're not sure, right? But then the two play mats that came out and then the gear expansion, which is Riot Quest only, you know, have been doing really well. In fact, I first think our first run of the play mats sold out like instantaneously. And then we had to get more in. So that was, yeah, it was a good sign.
Yeah. So Josh, do you have some, anything from the Chain Attack community builders?
I thought you were gonna ask about Dank Doom memes first. Why would I think that?
I don't know.
It's like I've never done this before. honestly, sadly, there is not much conversation on the community builders. And I don't know what to think of that or how to feel about that, because we're all stuck inside.
It's kind of a tough thing right now. Another thing that this was actually what I was working on, right before this started. I was trying to do an inventory on the paints that we have in the store because, you know, we've been selling a lot of paint to people who are painting stuff at home during the pandemic. And there's, you know, it's been awesome and paints, sadly, an item that's fairly easy to have a fair bit of shrink on and people shoplifting. And so it was off. On the one hand, I think it's great that, you know, there's so many people doing painting and getting their hobby time in, but it is kind of weird or feels weird that, you know, a lot of us enjoy this social aspect of gaming with each other that we haven't really been able to do with each other.
Yeah, it's been rough. I see a lot of people on all the Facebook groups for all kinds of games saying exactly that. Like, they just miss getting out, miss being around their friends.
Right.
Even those of us that are introverts, like, I'm an extrovert, but I know a lot of people that gaming like to say they're introverts and they have, you know, like, gaming is their outlet. It's their social outlet to be able to get out and be comfortable. Right. And it's kind of been taken away from them.
Right.
That's another rough thing about all this is sort of the mental effect it's starting to take.
Right.
Drop the mood some more. Let's keep going.
Okay. Well, I've got to pick me up. So this will make you happy, Will, to know that this is the last time that you will hear a Dank Doom meme on Chain Attack.
Why?
Because we're doing a new format, and if we have you on in the future, we probably won't be doing Dank Doom memes.
Well, Chain Attack's staying around. It's still going to be called Chain Attack.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And, and you're going to be doing, like, just gaming in general, right? Like, I'm sure you'll occasionally do some privateer stuff, but you're going to do just more gaming overall, right?
Yeah.
Correct. Well,
we'll still do Dank Doom memes. I don't know why he's saying that. We're totally going to bring it back, even if we're not for you.
Okay. That's true. Every time be like the one time that
We'll have our annual Dank Doom meme episode when we'll invite you on.
Yeah, I was about to say, are you trying to tell me, Jay, you don't want me on the show anymore after this?
Well, he didn't say that we weren't going to talk about EF Chang's. He just said that.
Yeah. God.
Yeah.
Brutal.
Okay, Josh, give us the Dank Doom meme. Let's have a little pick-me-up.
Okay.
How is this a pick-me-up?
Okay.
Because it's so awesome.
First of all, I basically have two, but I can't find the one, and I'm really mad about it.
Good.
Because there's a Dank Doom meme where, I can't remember because it's not in front of me.
You know, the only thing, better than a Dank Doom meme is, like,
a poorly remembered
memory
one?
That you can't even remember what's exactly going on with it.
Look, Dank Doom memes from memory. This needs to be the new segment.
I just want you to know.
We can do
it involves the Navigators Guild and Carol Baskin, okay, from Tiger King. So I thought it would be an amazing mashup, but I lost the meme. I lost it. So here's the,
You are the worst.
Here's the actual dank bean meme I'm sharing for the day. This is on Twitter from a Darian Lake, and it has the clapping hands throughout the words. So it says, stop, clap, 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 making clap, fun, clap, of, clap, clap, the Fremen, clap, 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 and clap, their la clap of rhythm, clap, clap.
Oh, that's so bad.
Totally unrhythmic claps. Oh, it's so good.
It's awful. It's even worse if you haven't read the book. Like, that's not even like, oh gosh.
Oh, it's amazing. So, did you guys see that a reporter from the New York Post asked Trump if he was going to consider pardoning the Tiger King?
Yes, I saw it.
No,
it should be a college course in sucking up, honestly. The way the guy asked the question, like, oh, it's amazing.
This is the most depressing shit I've ever done.
This is what happens when you get old, Hungerford.
This whole podcast.
That's right. It's a masterclass.
Don't worry.
In getting
we're just,
old.
Will, we're just setting the floor nice and low so that everything else will be amazing.
I can't wait.
Okay, so before we get into the main topic, I wanted to give to lighten the mood by.
You need to stop saying that because it's not working.
Like sharing a little tale of what it's been like doing some small business stuff during all this. So Congress passed the payroll protection plan, and last Friday. I think it was last Friday. It feels like 3 years ago at this point. It opened up, and I submitted all my stuff to my credit union for Discount Games, Inc. And then a few days ago, I got back to him, and I was like, so what's going on with this? And he's like, well, we think you're approved, but we can't disperse any funds yet because the government hasn't given us the loan docs for people to sign, so we don't know what people are actually going to be signing. And so that's been the adventure for DGI. The adventure for Muse is that, so when I went into business with Nigel previously, they had been working at a credit union, and we decided that we needed to go with a national bank going forward so that, you know, if I needed to, I could do a withdrawal or deposit from Idaho. And so, well, many years ago, Wells Fargo bought my mortgage, and so I was like, okay, I might as well do it with Wells Fargo, because I have to go into Wells Fargo periodically anyways. And so with this protection plan, the banks don't want to do the protection plan with you unless you are already a customer. For the vast majority of the banks feel that way about it, because there's like the Treasury Department hasn't really given very good guidelines on what oversight they're expected to do, but the banks are worried that if they are just like giving out these loans to people, that the Treasury Department will get mad at them over like money laundering or fraud and so, you know, the easiest way to, deal with that is if you are already an existing customer with them. And so, that meant I had to try to deal with Wells Fargo for this new government program. And so it opens on Friday. On Friday, Wells Fargo was like, yeah, we're not ready to do this. We'll do an update on our page when we are. And so then they finally do an update, and they're like, yeah, we still don't have our form for you to apply, but go ahead and log into your online account and say if you're interested. And so I log in, and they're like, okay, you're in the queue now. And at some point, we will consider contacting you, but you might want to consider getting a loan from someone else or doing this with someone else, because the funds are going to run out before we get to you.
Oh, that sucks.
And so mainly, so I'm like stuck in this situation of, I've been dealing with this national bank that is just the worst, and don't have very many options on, like, who we can go with, etc. So it's been a little bit of a frustration for Muse. So,
a quick question.
Yeah.
How is any of that uplifting?
So,
let me see if I can explain. Mm-hmm. Jay is worse off than me, and so I feel better now.
Schadenfreude? Is that it? Yeah.
Not really, because I'm not in that. I'm in like the same boat, but he's in the part of the boat that's already in the water, and I'm at the other end.
Yeah, really, it was mostly just sarcasm. Okay, so we did a dojo recently, Mr. Hungerford.
Mm-hmm.
We received a question from a listener where he asked us, you know, if you guys were in charge of War Machine, what would you have done differently in the transition from Mark II to Mark III, and what would you do going forward with the to make sure that War Machine has a bright future?
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that from the transition from Mark II to Mark III, you were not at that time God Emperor of War Machine, but you are now.
The very recent thing that I've become lead developer of it, yes.
So, I guess I'd be kind of curious to get your insight as, like, what did you feel were some of the lessons learned from the transition, and as lead developer, what do you think are the important things to make sure that the War Machine has a bright future?
Sure. I mean, there's a lot learned from that transition. The transition over into Mark III was rocky. It had some issues coming out. That's why there was the bigger ratas, not having all the theme forces available from day one, when that was such an integral way for the game to be played. And just a lot of what has changed in the addition. You know, I don't want to say, you know, we're at War Machine Mark 3.5, but we kind of are, right? Like, after Oblivion, with how big things changed and how theme force construction happens, and you're no longer having to spend so many points to unlock stuff, it's vastly changed things. So it's hard to say, like, you know, what will we have changed in the transition? All the lessons we've learned since then, we would apply them then so that they'd have been ready to go out of the gate. But you can't know that till it happens, right? I would say going forward, though, that's definitely a lot of what I spend my brain power on, is what do we keep doing and where are we going with War Machine, and sort of what is the plan? And obviously, I can't talk about too many things out in the far future, but big thing for me right now is accessibility to the game. Obviously, we have the dedicated core of people that play, and they will get people coming in. But for them, you want to keep things interesting. You want to keep things fresh, and you want to provide new models and new design space so that they're able to have a healthy meta and not feel like the game is ever becoming stale. And we're in a lucky position with that, because there's so many different types of models out there that you can change up a few things and get a fresh experience. But the flip side of that coin is there is so many models in War Machine that getting a new person in can be daunting, right? You show them how to play the game and what to do, and there's just a lot of material you have to digest before you can get up to tournament level. So going forward, one of my main goals is, how do we ensure this game is accessible so that we have new blood? And what does that mean? What does that mean for a 1-year plan? What does that mean for a 5-year plan? You know, if there is another edition of War Machine, how different is it? What are we going to take away? What are we going to add? What are we going to change? And stuff like that.
So you heard it here first. Project Mugu Gai Pan is under development at Predator Press.
Oh.
And Mark IV, imminent.
Imminent. Right.
Now I'm hungry.
Didn't we talk about on the last podcast you and I were on, the meta, when we were talking about things, the things that I would like to change if there ever is a Mark IV. Like, you know, I said things, to give you an example of what I'm talking about. Like, if there ever is a Mark IV, I would love to get rid of facing. I just think that at this point in the game, with the amount of models you have, it adds just that extra layer of everything having to face the right way and make sure the model's centered when it charges and all the different stuff that, you know, we've been playing a lot of Warcaster internally lately, getting ready for that game. That game doesn't have facing, and Warcaster uses far less models than War Machine. And you just see how much it speeds up the experience. I would be looking at things like that. I also think that it would just increase accessibility, because it's a rather intricate layer to do right, that a new player has to overcome, including like painting arcs on their bases and stuff like that. So I always have that kind of stuff in my mind.
Okay. So Josh and Trevor, what questions do you guys have for Mr. Hungerford, God Emperor of War Machine, and Riot Quest?
Oh, God.
So my question is in relation to the number of SKUs and models in the game.
Yeah.
How do you think you can approach that in a way that helps new players in the future approach the game?
Sure. Yeah. This is the thing I think also Jay and I went on length on the meta. The game will need a limited format, a true limited format at some point. And that has a lot of, it has a lot of obstacles to overcome. Because if you look at other really popular games that have a long legacy, a long lineage, like Magic the Gathering, right? If Magic the Gathering didn't have standard and you were like, okay, it's time to play Magic, and you were just thrown in the pool with everyone who had Black Lotuses up until today, it'd be so hard to approach. Now obviously War Machine doesn't have the same amount of models that Magic has cards, but the same principles apply here. There has to be an area where people can jump in and they only have to worry about a very specific subset. Champions does kind of do this, but not as, you know, as perfectly as it could, because in a perfect world, it wouldn't just be certain casters and theme forces. It would literally be like this 25, 30 models per faction. And that's what you could build your lists out of. The obstacles of that is that, one, it has to get buy-in, and it's hard to get buy-in on a miniatures game to do that, because people that have had their trenchers painted for 10 years, and all of a sudden you tell them, you know, trenchers aren't in the current block, you can't play with those, then people just, they're out, right? They don't care anymore. Because buying a new card for a card game versus painting and buying a new model is a very different amount of investment in time and resources. So you have to figure out, how can you make a limited format that is as, well respected by the community as something like Masters. And the easy answer would be you give it the biggest prizes and the most support, but then you run into the obstacle of you can't have cash prizes in a miniatures game. There's too much room for human error. People would get in fist fights over a model getting bumped if there was, you know, $10,000 on the line. So I think that's the answer. One way to do it is something like that. And trying to figure out the silver bullet implementation of it has been a challenge.
So let me follow up my question then, because in Magic, the standard format is the introductory format for all players.
Mm-hmm.
In War Machine, the Champions format is, in my opinion, an advanced format that players only move to after they are introduced to the game and have some experience in it.
Yes.
So clearly that, to accomplish your stated goal, needs to change. Do you think that having a limited number of models that never change as the core, say Haley 1, Trenchers, whatever, but those are always in Champions, and you never, if you add something to Champions, that's the change, not changing them. But do you think that's a possible approach?
I think it is a possible approach. The other thing that I've been heavy on my mind lately is it ties in what you say, is that whatever this format would be would need its own scenario pack separate from Steamroller. But the thing is, if you go to a Magic Pro Tour, Standard can be played just as competitively and just as the high level as Modern or Draft and stuff like that, right? And that's the thing, is that all their formats are kind of viewed across the board equally viable in terms of being a competitive or a casual player. It's just that if you're jumping in, Standard's the easiest to jump into because of the limited pool and the availability of the product. And so that is the trick, is creating this thing that a new player can jump into, and this become the tournament format they can get into with a limited amount of models, but then they could still face people that are well known and well respected in the community, and that winning whatever this limited format is just as prestigious. What's that?
Your internet did its little cutout for a second.
Your prophesied cutout occurred.
Oh no. Where did I cut off at?
It would be just next as prestigious. To Virata.
What's that?
Nothing.
You said that it was just as prestigious, and then you cut out.
Oh yeah. It had to be just as prestigious as Masters, right? And that's the trick. I might have said some other things, but you get the idea of what I'm saying, right?
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I just think that the barrier for entry of Champions right now is the changing format, and that, you know, even as an experienced player, I've got to learn a new meta every 6 months.
Oh, that's the thing. That's the thing I said that I got cut out, is I can absolutely see there being a core of models that stays, but then aspects of it do change kind of based on the most available product of things that recently released. But I don't disagree with you that there could be a a fundamental core that everything is built off of. You would just want to be able to provide variety. Otherwise, that if it was always the same and nothing changed, then that meta would eventually become solved and become stale, right? And so you need a way to inject some new life into it.
Well, that happens somewhat in Magic Standard as well. You have cards that are generally in core and generally return, and you know, there's a common pool of cards that. I mean, I'm speaking a little bit in hyperbole here, but there's a common group of cards that are always there.
Yeah, there's certain common aspects that are always there, right? And that's what I'm saying. I think you could have a core of models that would remain, but I don't want to give a percentage, be like, oh, 30% core and 70% rotates, but just that there would have to be a rotating element, like there's a Magic when the card sets rotated and it becomes standard again, to keep that fresh meta. But overall, to answer your question, I think that is what will have to happen at some point in the future, probably sooner rather than later.
All right. I'm prepared for my question. Mr. Hungerford.
Yes.
After creating what is arguably the greatest gargantuan of all time in the Dracodile.
Go on.
What are you most excited about currently in the Minions faction? I have a follow-up question.
Sure. For Minions, I mean, there's you know, some fun Riot Quest models coming up in the next block, in the Wintertime Wasteland block. There's actually a lot more faction-only models in the next Riot Quest block than there was this first one. But that aside, I've been doing a lot of work on the upcoming Trollblood Pharaoh mixed theme force, the one that's going to say all the models count. They all count as the same faction. Which means you're going to have Pharaoh casters with troll beasts. You're going to have troll casters with Pharaoh beasts, and you're going to have a lot of synergies, mixed in between. It's been fun. It's been fun cutting things out of it. You know, obviously a lot of people immediately Arcadius pops in their head. What is Arcadius going to be like with Dyers and stuff like that? It's been both fun thematically to make sure we're staying on the story element of what this theme force is supposed to be. And then the design aspect of, you know, what if we did this? And then what if we take, you know, then we have to take this piece away and this piece away. It's sort of a big puzzle. And so I'm just excited about it because it's one of my current projects.
I am also excited about it. Okay. So this is related to my follow up question. Realistically, you know, what are the possibilities for a Pharaoh Gargantuan? Or is this now the answer to the Pharaoh Gargantuan, that they get access to the Troll Blood Gargantuan?
No, this isn't the answer. I would definitely say a Pharaoh Gargantuan is still on the table. I mean, one's not coming out this year, because we've already said that this year there's going to be a lot of Legion and Troll stuff coming out.
Sure.
But yeah, no, it's totally still possible. I'm sure that Arcadius could whip up something absolutely bonkers, right?
Yes. Especially if you started sewing infernal parts onto something, right?
I don't think you want to do that. I think in general that's a bad idea.
Well, I mean, I can confirm with our fluff lord, Jay. You know, would that be a bad idea, Jay?
No, it seems fine. Seems fine, yeah.
The problem is, I don't know if Arcadius could build, like, I think a lot of people think of a piggy gargantuan, they're thinking like a giant Frankenstein, right? Like, I think this giant fleshy, but I don't know that the bone structure would work. To me, it's more like Tetsuo from Akira. It's just this giant fleshy mound of faces and eyes that just wants to die but can't, and it's just sort of rolling across the floor. Arcadius is like, look, this is the best I could do with the tools I had. I'm sorry.
You heard it here first, folks. Arcadius is going to craft a gargantuan level gelatinous cube.
Yeah.
No, its name is Tetsuo.
Yeah, its name is Tetsuo. Yeah, we'll just flat out call it Tetsuo.
We wouldn't
get in trouble for that at all.
So, Will, do you have any questions for us?
You know, honestly, most of the stuff, first off, thank you guys. I know this is the last Chain Attack where you are doing War Machine and Privateer content only. So, sincerely.
Well, this is episode 198.
What's the last one then?
200 will be the final.
We're getting there.
We're doing our grand conclusion.
Well, thank you for 200 episodes, and then everything else. You know, you three have been part of the community for longer than I have. And so, you know, thanks for all the content you've always produced, and general open gaming and just talk about board games, other miniatures games. Are you going to talk about RPGs at all?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. RPGs. And I'm sure, like you said, you're still going to talk about our games, right? It's just not going to be solely focused on it. So, yeah, I don't have a question for you. Just more of like, you know, thanks. Like you provided hours of entertainment for people. Jay, you and I have done commentary more times than I can count. You've made me realize I hate dank Dune memes, which I didn't know was a thing.
it's important to learn these things about oneself. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And so, yeah, that, no questions. Just a good job. And I look forward to what all you're going to talk about in the future, because I think everyone knows that, you know, all of us, we all play a wide variety of games. And with the kind of coverage the three of you have, it'll be interesting to hear your thoughts on the next Euro game you're playing, or maybe the next like game you're looking at kickstarting, or what's going on in your RPG game. Like, if you're just going to a pure variety show, that's so many different topics you could talk about every episode. So it's exciting.
So Will, what RPG would you be most interested in hearing us talk about?
I have run a D&D game for the last 24 years now. I run it every Sunday. Like,
that is amazing.
D&D is my main game. But I do play other RPGs, because what we'll usually do is I usually run a roughly year long campaign. So they usually go about 8 to 9 months, and then we'll play a side campaign with another game, and then we'll come back to the main campaign with either pre-existing characters or brand new characters in the same world. So I've done like Shadowrun and Mutants and Masterminds and all kinds of different stuff. So I like just hearing what people are up to and what they're enjoying. And for D&D, especially when you look at like DM's Guild, what content DM's Guild has so much content on it. And a show that reviewed some of that content and was like, you should go pick up this supplement and you should go pick up this would be excellent information to have.
Okay. We can do stuff like that for sure.
But just in general, like board games, I talked to so many different people, Plummer, Pagani, Berman, all the people that we all know, right? That I still hang out with and play games with. And I'm always hearing about random games. Like Pagani has probably introduced me to more random board games than I can count, right? Hell, I played the Dune board game for the first time at LVO with Pagani and Jay, which that was the one only time I ever got a chance to throw down on that. But yeah, just hearing board game reviews is always useful information, because you just learn about stuff that someone's like, here's this obscure $25 board game, check it out. And you're like, oh, this is totally fun. I love this game.
I came to the realization afterwards what playing Dune with you and Pagani reminded me of.
Go on.
And it reminded me of you guys daring each other to drink Malort with Tony.
Yeah.
I presume that's something that's mildly unpleasant.
It's an experience. It's very hard to describe.
So, since this is a little bit of a retrospective episode, and you know, it's episode 198, of getting towards the end of Chain Attack, I did have kind of a retrospective question for you, Will, asking, and maybe can kick it out to the other guys as well, but what are, I guess, particularly related to War Machine or Privateer Press stuff, what are some of your favorite memories that you've had associated with this game?
Oh man, there's entirely too many, but okay, off the top of my head, every time I got to hang out with the press gang in mass, the Gen Con press gang parties, being at Gen Con with all the press gangers, Lock and Load, having the invitational with everyone, and just getting to hang out, because it was people I talked to via email and on the phone so much, and then being able to just sit there with everyone and just talk about all the different stuff that was going on. There's been a lot of community-driven stuff over the years that has been really awesome to help support or be a part of, from Breast Cancer Brawl to Food Machine. Cause that's where I came from, right? Like this, anybody who's heard me on the show before, it's not a surprise. Like I was a press ganger before I joined the company a decade ago, and community has always been like my driving force. It's why I'm in this industry. It's why I don't work in a cubicle somewhere. That's why I became quartermaster for 5 years before I moved into development. So most of my favorite memories are just involving other players and other people involved in the game and just hearing good stories and things that happened. Other than that, probably one of the most exciting things was when we started the whole streaming process, at conventions, when that was really new, and getting to do that from the ground floor up and getting to bring live stream games from the con to people's homes and listening to people in commentary cheer on Jay versus, you know, Jason Watt in the first Iron Gauntlet and stuff like that. Like, again, it's community related. That's probably my favorite memories overall.
What about you guys? What would you say?
Well, I already referenced it, but seriously, the reveal of the Dragon Isle, because I was at Lock and Load that year. It was just awesome. I mean, Will is one of those people that commands enthusiasm so well throughout the course of whatever he's doing, you know. And since we both have a shared deep affection for Minions, that particular reveal was a lot of fun for me.
Oh yeah, I was standing near you, wasn't I?
Yeah.
I was right. I remember. I don't remember what I said, but didn't I look over to you and like yell something at you right before it came on?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
So one of the things I'll say that I appreciate from my time playing War Machine is that, you know, it kind of started out with Trevor, where I'd never done miniature gaming, and I started selling various games, and I started selling a fair bit of War Machine, and I felt like I ought to try out this game that I'm starting to sell a fair bit of. And then Trevor came into the shop and bought some War Machine, and we started doing a regular game between just the two of us. And then we started, you know, trying to build a community locally, and we would have weekly game nights, we would have tournaments, and then Trevor and I and some of the rest of the people, we would start traveling to regional events. And then one of my fond memories is us going for the first time to Lock and Load, and me getting like so worked up over things that I threw up in the bathroom before Master started.
Oh God.
and then, you know, just continuing being able to, you know, go to War Machine Weekend or go to Gen Con, go to Adeptcon, and you know, the travel is fun, although it is kind of interesting that it turns out that the inside of one convention hall looks a lot like any other. But the thing that's nice is that, you get to meet new people. You end up establishing friends that you get to spend time with. And I think that some of the things that I'm most grateful with the game is that, there's just so many friends I have in my life now that are because of this kind of silly game, and that it would have no connection otherwise if that hadn't happened. And obviously it's expanded beyond that to where the friendships are now deeper than just the connection from War Machine. But I'm grateful that War Machine kind of acted as the bridge that allowed us to establish that friendship.
Dude, I feel you 100%. 90% of my friend group is either people I met through War Machine or that I worked with, right?
Right.
Like, hell, a lot of people I hang out with regularly, like I mentioned some of them earlier, Simon Berman, Michael Plummer, Ed Burrell, Will Pagani, you know, Dallas, everybody. There's too many names to go off of. Like, people that I just spend time with and see at different events and barbecues and Pagani's backyard and all that stuff. That's all because I worked at Privateer. It's when I try and think of what a profound effect this game has had on my life, it's kind of hard to quantify, because I'm like, man, I wouldn't know most of the people I know if it wasn't for War Machine.
Yeah, I think I've said it before, but it's given me a connection to the world that I would have never had. You know, my sweetheart, she kind of pokes fun about the fact that she could take me pretty much anywhere on Earth and I would find, you know, friends who wanted to play or talk about War Machine. And I'm like, yeah, that is, it's undeniable and it's really remarkable.
Yeah, it's super special, right?
So, I'm going to share two things. The first thing I want to talk about is Jay's memory, because I'm going to explain to the listeners how big of a drug dealer he is. Okay, so, go back to the time where I come in and I'm like, I want to play this game, and I bought some models from him. At the time, I believe I was making $10.50 an hour. Okay, so each week I'd come in and buy a new unit or something, and then I'd take it home and assemble it, and I'd spray paint it black, and I'd bring it back in, and we would play. And I remember multiple times me coming in and saying, well, I really can't afford this, and Jay would be like, well, we can just put it on your tab, and he created a tab for me. And basically, for the first probably 4 years, maybe longer, of my War Machine career, I owed Jay anywhere from $100 to $600 in miniatures. So at any given point, I would be, you know, taking my paycheck, taking off the chunk for Jay, and bringing it in to, you know, make sure that I wasn't, you know, completely over my bounds. My wife would ask me, how much do you owe Jay right now? And I'd be like, well, I don't know if you want to know that, dear. So anyway, I can say that I don't owe Jay anything right now. So, I definitely did for a very long time. So I think some of my favorite memories of War Machine were from early Mark II. There was a lot of exploring that I did, a lot of interesting builds that I tried, things that were new and different for everyone. And, you know, the field test was part of that. I remember there was a point where Mulg in the field test had, seems like he had the attack and move thing that Madrak 1 had. And I just remember, like, killing everything on the table in a field test and being like, yeah, that's fine. He only lasted that way for maybe a week or week and a half before they changed him, but... I just, a lot of my troll playing memories from early in Mark II, flying circus stuff, throwing Borka, and, you know, stumbling into people and having that stuff sometimes work was some of the most amazing, gameplay of my life. And it was not tactical. It was, I didn't know the game well enough at the time. I didn't know the dice well enough. So I'm like, yeah, this has got like a 50-50 shot when it was more like a 5% shot. But, you know, sometimes having the mystery there, you know, keeps the fun in it.
It is kind of funny to look back at, like, the early games of Trevor and I playing versus each other. And it does speak to the level of how much of a glutton for punishment Trevor is. Because, the game in Mark 1 and the game that we played with each other, like, wasn't really very balanced. And... it wasn't, it didn't have scenarios. Like, there were some, the steamroller wasn't really a thing.
There were scenarios
in the books, but they were kind of weird.
Very light is what I would call them.
Yeah. And so, and like just in general, the general, most people, like, you just didn't play scenarios. It wasn't really a thing in general. Like, now it's kind of a cultural thing where it's kind of the expectation that you're going to have some sort of scenario, and there's a reason for that, because, you know, if you don't have that, then you end up with bullshit like I did, where you just had a redeemer that would stay back on the edge of the table and just stand and shoot and back up if you need to and keep shooting. And it's interesting to see how the game has progressed as within itself as far as being like an enjoyable product to play. I feel like it's continually improving, and it's also interesting how Steamroller has been kind of an important part of that.
Well,
Jay, I have a...
Go ahead, yeah.
Let me ask a question, and maybe you and Will. Like, Will was talking about, you know, trying to lower that barrier to entry for new players. How was that barrier to entry in Mark 1?
Oh, it was horrible.
How it is now.
Horrible.
And there was less models back then.
It was 10 times worse. Not because of model count, though. The reason it was worse is because the gotchas were 10 times worse.
Mm.
You know, the things... I shouldn't say 10 times worse. There's still some pretty bad gotchas in the game. But it felt like everyone had gotchas. Every faction had gotchas. And everyone was playing them. And it felt like... I mean... there was a major tournament in Mark 1 where, with Vlad 2 and Iris 1 probably, basically Iris 1, Widowmakers, and Vlad hit Iris, or maybe not Iris, I can't remember, but the four Widowmakers and have Iris pre-deploy, have her assault shot the front line of the opponent before they even go, and then have the Widowmakers move up, and they move farther because Vlad's feet let them move 9 instead of 6, so they would walk forward, and you would put like Hand of Faders on them, and then you would be stripped of all your focus, and you'd be shot dead before you even went if you deployed your caster on the front line. So that's the sort of thing that Mark 1 had that we don't have anymore. So yes, I think the barrier to entry as far as learning the game definitely was harder when it comes to that stuff. The barrier to entry now is very different. It's more based on just the sheer volume of information.
Yeah, that is interesting.
I'm back.
We missed
Hello
you.
Again, Will. It's okay. We kept talking without you.
Yeah, sorry about that. My internet, you know, with everything going on, has recently become like kind of weirdly spotty, and so normally it drops like 30. What?
It's like you're living in the country.
Yeah, it was weird. So it just dropped. I went and checked my modem, and everything shut off, and then it just restarted for
maybe
no
you need
reason.
To move. Maybe you need to move away from that backwoodsy town of Seattle and come to Idaho Falls, where we have fiber to the home.
You know, I did visit Idaho Falls when I came and saw Jay during my road trip around Yellowstone, and it was a nice little city.
And you didn't come and see me? I am offended.
I'm pretty sure we
talked about this already.
We invited you to come to Mackenzie River with us, and you were busy.
Yeah.
I don't remember this.
I do.
All right, fine.
Sorry about the delay. I am back now.
In your defense, it was basically like, oh, Hungerford is here at 4 p.m. Do you want to come to dinner at 5:30? So.
I mean, we didn't expect to be there, right? Like, we were stopping in that town nearby, and everything was booked up, and so we were like, we weren't near any campgrounds. We're like, what's the next town? Idaho Falls. What up, Jay?
Hey. That's awesome. Yeah, they made the yeoman's mistake of thinking that there would be
hotels
reasonable
near there.
Reasonable hotel prices at Jackson.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, yeah, no. So I have to know, Hungerford, what is your opinion on that? Do you feel like the barrier of entry between Mark 1, Mark 2, and did you? I don't even know if you played Mark 1, but do you believe do you believe that it's gone down, or do you believe that it's gone up over additions?
I definitely played in Mark 1. That's when I did most of my, well, I mean, just before I joined the company, so most of my competitive gaming as a player was in Mark 1. I think just by nature that the game has gotten more options, the barrier of entry has gone up. It has to, right? Like, when you think of the Mark 1 days, there was probably in the range of 400-ish models across every faction by the end of Mark 1?
I think more than that, actually, but somewhere around there. Yeah, I would say closer to 500-600.
It's something like that, right? Like, but now we're at like 1250. Right. And so the barrier entry is just going to be higher because there's so much more you have to learn in all the various combos and theme forces and things that have happened. I think there are aspects of the game that are easy. I mean, like, a lot easier. Like, we remember screening from Mark 1. Thank God that's gone.
Oh.
Right.
Command check.
Oh, no. See, like, command checks. Being able to snipe out the leader in the old days and no field promotion back in Mark 1. The rules are a lot more streamlined these days. There's not multiple rules that do the same thing that have different names. Like, it came from the knight on the Death Jack, which was just advanced deployment.
Right. So
the game, if we looked at the game system like an engine, like a car engine, it is better. It is more streamlined. There's just a lot more buttons inside the cockpit when you go to drive it now, and you have to learn all those.
Yeah, I mean, there was things like most of the commanders in each unit had different stats. You know, the unit itself didn't have all the same stats within it. You had a commander who usually had +1 mat and a higher command stat. Yeah.
You had disabled jacks that when they lost 3 systems, they just died, and your hull was a system. Like, there was a lot going on.
Okay. Well, we're close to the end of time on this one. We have just a little bit left. Do you guys have any final questions or final thoughts on anything?
No, I guess my final thoughts are that I'm looking forward to the future of War Machine. I mentioned in the previous episode that I think that some of the people who've left, even though the game is in a great position and is a great game to play, the only way you're ever going to get them to come back and try it again is with a new edition. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to the future of War Machine, whether it's, you know, rules changes or new models changes or just new model releases. But I also look forward to new editions to see those people come back, because I think I wish I could somehow convince them that the thing they're missing currently is great, but they just don't want to hear it. You know, the only thing they do is they come on and complain about, you know, blah, blah, blah at the beginning of Mark 3. Well, you know what? That was years ago. It literally was years ago at this point. Come back, try it in its current position, and see if you like it. And I think most of them would, but they won't even give it a shot. But I think they might with a new edition. So anyway, I think that we'll revisit this topic, especially in a few years when hopefully there's a Mark 4. And I want to see how the community approaches it. So I'm excited for the future of War Machine.
And Trevor, I think some people would. But to be honest, like you said, there are some people that once their mind's made up on something, they're done, right?
Right.
That's just who they are. And it's not just about this game. It's about things in life in general.
Sure, it's human race.
You're right. They just decide, like, this is how I feel about it. And so there are some people that we've lost that unfortunately we're probably never going to get back. But that means there's a lot of room for other new people to come in, which hopefully we see.
So sorry, we didn't talk about one thing. If you have like 30 seconds, can you share anything about the future of Steamroller?
Yeah. So there's going to be a big insider coming up for me very soon. But one thing, you want to talk about the Steamroller that's coming up this year?
Yes.
Okay. So one of the big things is there was supposed to be a CID right now. It was supposed to run through April. Obviously, that's not happening.
Oh, no.
We can't. Like, I can't tell people to try and play through Vassal or play online. Not everybody has those resources. Not everybody wants to play that way. And it's very irresponsible, obviously, of us to try and have a home CID right now. Because we don't want to encourage people trying to meet up in large groups whatsoever.
Yeah.
What this means is that Steamroller will be delayed. There's no way around it. It will be delayed. Normally it's like the week after Lock and Load. It's going to be a little bit after that because we need to have the CID for it. And we have to wait until things get back to normal before we can hold that. This next Steamroller, we're going to see a lot of cool stuff. We're going to see new scenarios. We're going to see Steamroller only terrain. We're going to see new, objectives. There's a lot of things that are changing in this one that has been built off of the success of 2019, because a lot of people have said 2019 is one of their favorite packets. So we're not trying to suddenly reinvent the wheel and flip it on its head. We're trying to add on interesting layers to what is currently working, but it's gonna just be a bit because the world's got to get back to normal first.
So say we all.
I had a question in my head and it has fluttered away because I'm old, but,
you can bet anything. It's because you filled your mind with dank Dune memes. Think how much you forgot by remembering a dank Dune meme.
Listen, that's good. The thing that he removed, it wasn't worth it.
It could have been a crucial math equation that you learned a long time ago that's going to be useful one day. And now it's just gone. You'll never know what it is.
There's no such thing as crucial math equations.
If we put enough dank Dune memes in his head, he'll probably forget where the P.F. Chang's are.
Oh. See, I don't think that's possible. I don't think Jake could ever forget where the nearest P.F. Chang's or Applebee's or Chili's is.
You're probably right.
You cut me deep, Will.
I just say things that are true.
We'll always have Applebee's with each other.
So yeah, I guess Jay, it's hard to know what show we'll see each other at next, right? And
yeah.
Trevor and Josh, were y'all before all this, were you planning on going to any shows this year?
Yes. I was planning on being at Lock and Load. I was planning on being at Gen Con. That's all up in the air at this point, right?
Yeah, same. I was planning on Gen Con, Lock and Load, and a board game geek convention.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
A board game convention probably in my future as well.
Those are always really fun. Well, hopefully I get to see the three of you at some point this year. Who knows with everything going on right now, what the future holds, but hopefully it gets better sooner rather than later.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of interesting to see what Warfare Weekend ends up doing. And I guess to another extent, like the Iron Gauntlet Invitational, because like the qualifying events aren't happening.
Mm-hmm.
So. Makes it difficult.
We're ending on a downer here, guys.
Has there been an upper? Well, you know, we talked about community and our friends we've made.
Yeah, so we talked about the things we enjoyed the most about the game.
Yeah, so people, the listeners here, this whole podcast is really super, super depressing in the start and the end. And there's like a nugget of joy in the middle. And then, you know, you just got to get to that outer crust of unhappiness first.
I mean, you just described us.
Yeah.
As a show.
Yeah, let's change the tagline. Get through the outer crust of unhappiness.
I mean, that's a good podcast name, Crust of Unhappiness.
So, I guess in the spirit of last time you were on the meta, we had a listener question that said, like, of the top secret things that you're not allowed to talk to anyone about.
Yes.
Which of those can you tell us?
Yeah, I remember that question. It was great.
And I was hoping we could maybe ask that to you right now and get a little breaking news on upcoming things.
Just you spring that on me. Just right at the end. Just what random thing can I spoil for you?
He's wily.
No.
Oh, darn it. if we were
professional. His discipline is amazing.
That's lame.
I mean, I'll tell you something small I could tell you. So I think people know Bethane 2 is coming. If not, they do now.
Okay.
But they didn't know her full name. Her name is Bethane Pride of Everblight. And I will simply say people have been asking when a Karchev-esque warlock would be coming.
Ooh.
Nice. That is a tasty nugget.
So there you go. There's a super tasty nugget for you, Jay. Since this is the end of Chain Attack as we know it, and Crust of Unhappiness starts at issue or episode 201.
Yes. Crust of Unhappiness. No, see, we've already gotten through the crust. That was the last 9 years. Now we're to the gooey center.
Yes.
Okay, well, Josh, do you have a dad joke for us?
Yes, I've received some advice from a friend. He keeps saying, cheer up, man, it could be worse. You could be stuck underground in a hole full of water. I know he means well.
I literally regret every decision I've made today.
The final downer.
God.
Look forward to seeing the quarantarium, Will.
Thank you. I look forward to getting to build it when I can go outside and get that put together.
I'm constantly gaining weight. Like, every day I can feel myself getting fatter under quarantine. It's awful.
You gotta remember, man, you're not hungry, you're bored. Just tell yourself that. You're not hungry, you're bored. That's all it is.
I tell myself that I don't have a dad bod, I have a father figure.
Oh. Oh, it's so painful.
Okay. Well, next episode 199, we're going to be joined by one Aaron Well.
Excellent.
Who's on episode 200?
It's probably just going to be the three hosts.
Okay. Bethane Pride of Everblood.
Bethane Pride of Everblood. can you do me a favor for episode 200 and just introduce the show as Crust of Unhappiness before you then do the proper introduction?
We'll get right on
that.
Yeah,
we'll workshop that.
Thank you. Appreciate you. At least something good came out of this podcast, but I don't feel completely depressed after walking away from it.
Excellent. Well, on that uplifting note, we would like to thank everyone for listening to another episode of
Crust of Unhappiness. Ha 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 ha!